truth be told, it's Captain Ron here for Tony Sweet. We're at the UFO Congress in Phoenix for 2019. And I've got a fascinating guest that's been kind enough to sit down and talk to us, Kevin Day. As former Navy radar operator, Kevin Day is a retired U.S. Navy Senior Chief Operations Specialist who specializes in radar systems. He's a Top Gun air intercept controller with more than 20 years' experience in strike group air defense, including wartime operations. The reason he's here today is because in 2004, off the coast of San Diego, he was the radar operator on the USS Princeton, which is part of the USS Nimitz carrier strike group, which we all saw the tic-tac video. This was the man who was on the radar system at the time. And it's a much bigger story than people know, than just that little video they saw. Right, Kevin?
It is a much, much bigger story, yes. Yeah.
You and I talked about it a little bit last night. It's incredible. Why don't we just kind of, if you don't mind, let's kind of run through it. It started off where you were seeing these little blurbs a few days before the Tic Tac Day.
I could even go back a little further than that if
you
want.
Go back?
Yeah. You know, in 2004, the war was still going on overseas, and the Nimitz Strike Group had received orders to deploy early. So we all deployed. By the way, our entire strike group was not out there. There was a couple other players, the USS Chaffee and the USS Higgins. They were there synthetically, for lack of a better way to tell you, basically our gaming architecture. Yeah, so they were there, but not there. Anyway, at any rate, we're all out to sea. And our intention is to do some accelerated training exercises. And my job was air defense. My job was to identify everything in the sky and decide what to do about it, if anything. And on or about the 10th of November, I went up to CIC, or maybe I was even on watch, I don't recall. And I remember there's a five or six really strange tracks off the coast of San Clemente Island. And the reason why I say they were strange is because they were at 28,000 feet going 100 knots.
And that's extremely slow, right? Like, that should fall.
It should fall straight out of the sky, right?
Right, okay.
It really should. And they're in formation, and it was kind of like watching snow fall on a calm winter day. They stayed relative position to each other, just tracking down. And no one in CIC, we were unable to identify them because...
How common is that? Is that something that happens all the time, or is this pretty rare?
This is extremely rare.
Okay.
I had 18 years of... experience on that radar system at that point.
You know, never saw something like this?
Never.
Wow.
Because nothing really flies like that. Our systems are automated, but they're not automatic. So it's up to me to ID stuff. And we use things like flight profile. Is it going really fast, really high? Is it going really slow and really low?
Sure.
Is it on a commercial air route? Is it emitting any type of electronic signals? And the human puts all that together because situational awareness isn't on the computer, it's in my head. And the same with everyone in our Combat Information Center, we call it CIC. You know, we had years and years of training and probably millions of dollars spent on training us.
Sure.
And no one in CIC, and we were the air defense commander for the strike group, had any idea at all what these objects were. I wasn't really concerned about them because we were way down here, they were way up there close to the coast, and for all we knew, it was some civilian thing going on, had nothing to do with it. They weren't even aware that we were there. Until the 14th of November, I had designed an air defense exercise in which we were going to do a mock air battle. We're going to have the interceptors and the good guys launch off the Nimitz. We're going to have the mock bad guys launch.
Hold on, Kevin. You said 14th, so that's 4 days. Did it happen 10th, 11th, 12th, 13th?
Yes.
It kept going. So every day, not just once.
As a matter of fact, these objects showed up in groups at different times.
Like 5 or 10 in a group?
Yeah, between 5 and 10 each time it happened. And if you were to add them all up over that course of 6 days or so, they're about 100 objects.
Wow.
I don't know if they're the same object. I don't even know if they're the same shape and size because on my system, all I'm seeing is a little symbol. I don't see the rate. It's not easy for me to see the raw radar.
Are they always at that same height and that same speed or similar?
Yeah, right between 25 and 30,000 feet,
gotcha.
Mostly at 28,000 going 100 knots. Now, I found out later, I wasn't aware of it at the time, but there are watchstanders, theater ballistic missile defense watchstanders who do watch outer space, high altitudes. And I found out recently that there's claims that these objects actually descended from space and went to 80,000 feet. And
Jesus.
Then went from 80,000 feet down to 28,000 feet. Where that's where my, you know, that.
What is your ceiling?
I generally look lower than 40,000 feet.
So you're under 40, and these may have been from the other group at 80 and dropped into yours at 28.
Yeah, because then, you know, any adversary aircraft isn't going to fly, you know, they're only going to fly so high. So I wasn't even focused way up there, but the other watchtenders were apparently.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so you saw these over a 4 or 5 day period, and then on the 14th, go ahead.
I had designed a major air defense exercise. We're going to do a mock battle in the sky, but Captain Smith comes down to combat, and I said, "Hey, sir, you know we've been tracking these weird objects, and no one's really worried about them, except for now, because we're gonna launch a bunch of aircraft, and I've got these unknown other objects in the sky, and all of a sudden we're going to be in the same piece of sky in the same airspace, and I'm concerned for safety of flight. And I strongly recommend that we intercept one of these things and visually ID it, see what it is." He looks at me and says, "You know what, Senior Chief? You're right. Do it." So we get back on the radio, and I'm the supervisor, right? And I got my air intercept controller. I'm the air intercept control supervisor.
Okay.
So I went and told him, "Hey, pick the closest one." And Commander Fravor happened to be airborne, and so he happened to get the intercept order. And he went, we vector him up towards the object, was probably 80 miles away from us or so. It's been a long time, so some of the details have kind of faded a little
bit. But Fravor's in a Hornet, right?
Yeah, he's in a F/A-18 Super Hornet.
Okay. So yeah. He can fly
to two aircraft. They usually fly in, you know, to one the lead and trail.
Gotcha.
And anyway, it's pretty boring. He's going up there until he gets to the merge plot position. Because we had his comms up in the overhead.
Tell us what that means.
Merge plot is when you got two objects in the sky, and now they're in the same vertical piece of sky, but on a two-dimensional display, it looks like one object now.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So he gets to that spot, and all of a sudden on the radio we hear, oh, my God, I'm engaged. And we're all like, what? You know, we're in a training environment. He's like,
right.
This ain't supposed to be happening, right? So, and on my scope, all of a sudden this object that he intercepted went from 28,000 feet, I found out the next day, down to the surface of the ocean in 0.78 seconds.
That's beyond gravity by far.
Non-Newtonian physics for sure. Non-classical physics. There was no sonic booms.
That's bizarre too.
And I'm inside the ship, so I may not have necessarily heard a sonic boom, but the pilots themselves said there was no sonic booms.
Right. Wow.
Yeah.
So
wow.
That's a lot of space to fall in a fraction of a second.
I think it's been calculated by the Scientific Correlation for Ufology, SCU. I think they figured it out was about 1,350 Gs.
Jesus.
And you know, the human body can withstand maybe 9, if you're superhuman, 10. The aircraft itself can only survive about 18 Gs before it flies apart.
Unbelievable.
So there's, whatever it was non-Newtonian.
Wow.
It wasn't classical physics.
Wow. You don't hear that phrase every day, right?
Right.
Oh, my God. So at this point, you see that happen on your radar. What are you thinking immediately?
I'm pooping my pants.
Right.
Yeah, I'm thinking, now, okay, now we've just entered the realm of the bizarre here. So anyway,
so what's Fravor do at this point? Because he came up upon it, and then it drops.
Yeah, and he went chasing down. He left the trail aircraft.
So he went after it.
He went following it down, and he gets down, and he sees a disturbance in the water. And he comes on the rail and says, Charlie, the person's call sign was Charlie. He said, Charlie, I think we may have a downed aircraft, because he saw something in the water. The water was kind of frothy and boiling. And from his perspective, it looked like it could have been a downed aircraft, because it was long and had two things sticking out.
And if he saw it go down like that, I'd be already thinking in the back of my mind that this thing crashed.
And believe me, they were. They were. Yeah. The pilots were bewildered and befuddled just like we were. So he went chasing it back down, and that object kind of reacted to him, and they got engaged again, and that object went straight back up to 28,000 feet, went back into the formation with the other objects, and continued going south at 100 knots as if nothing exciting had just happened.
Just right back to where it was.
Yeah. Rejoined. Kind of like a bird rejoining the flock and continuing with the flock.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, incredible.
And so then what happens? Did he go back and try to see the five of them or whatever? How many
he
there
was
were?
Low on fuel at that point.
Okay.
Because he only went up for a functional check flight. And
gotcha.
He had a little bit amount of fuel. And so he went RTB. He went returned to base, went back to the carrier. And the next flight that launched, he pulled it. The pilot's name was Chad Underwood, which has recently become public information. And he told Chad, hey, make sure there's an at-flare pod loaded on your aircraft, which is a forward-looking infrared radar, which the video that we all see, that's the unit, that's the equipment that filmed it.
So Fravor didn't have that on his.
He didn't have one.
Gotcha.
And I've heard secondhand that Underwood says, I'm going to go find those things. And he did exactly that.
Everybody's got to be buzzing around the ship at this point, like, what the hell's going on?
Yeah, you know, at least on the Princeton, sure. That was my situation, and at least in CIC. And, oh, by the way, by this time, other aircraft have launched off the Nimitz, and now I've got several intercepts going. And at one point, Captain, I got to tell you, it was raining UFOs.
People think this is just one event, but no, it's not.
These objects went choo, 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 and all the pilots, they chase them down, and they go choo, choo, back up to 28,000 feet.
So these guys are on their own in their Hornets, Super Hornets, and they're chasing them one at a time, and they're just raining all over the place.
They come out of the sky, the aircraft leaves, and they go back up to 28, rejoin in the formation, and they keep going south as if nothing fun had just happened.
Repeating that same pattern.
Yeah.
So you're watching this unfold on the screen. You've got to be going out of your mind that this is...
Yeah.
And you're seeing your guys chase them.
Yeah.
But they can't even come close to that speed.
If I could describe it, it was like throwing a stone at a bunch of birds, and they scatter.
Right.
And then they all rejoin and keep doing what they're doing.
Wow.
They acted like they were alive. They were acting like they just wanted to be left hell alone. Leave us alone.
Interesting.
I never once felt threatened by these things, based on their behavior. They just didn't exhibit any type of threatening profile.
So when we approached them, they just got out of the way, way down, and then went right back to
When we left, they went back to what they were doing.
Now, was it sort of a panic state on the ship while this is happening? While all these raining UFOs, as you say?
Strangely, no.
No, everybody just took it straight.
Well, we were busy trying to figure out what they were because, sure. You know, our systems are automated, but they're not. The system is not automatic.
Right.
It's up to me to make the identification, and I'll take things like flight profile. Is it flying really high and really fast? Is it flying really low and really slow? What type, if any, electronic signals are coming off the thing? Is it squawking identification, friend or foe codes that I know about? Do I have intel? And I put all these pieces of the puzzle together to ascertain an ID. It's educated guesswork, essentially.
Gotcha.
And that's what we were busy doing. We're all busy trying to figure out what the hell these things were. We're trained to keep doing our jobs instead of freaking out, you know?
Right. That's good. That's what I would hope you guys would be that. Right. I'd be freaking out, but you guys are so trained that you maintain.
We were pretty much focused on trying to figure out what they were, yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So the other pilot goes up. He's got the infrared thing on the front of his plane.
Yep.
Then he sees one.
Yep, he intercepted one, and that's the video that we all see.
And that's the tic-tac video that
taken
we see.
Is taken off to the left of the frame.
Yeah.
That's where that video came from. And, oh, by the way, the reason why I know the video that's online now is legitimate, because I got that same snippet in an MPEG file in my email the very next day. I think what happened is, and I'm speculating.
15 years ago.
Yeah, the very next day. I think what happened, one of the air crews must have taken the Atflir video, the original, and cut a little snippet out of it because he was excited to show it off, and he sent it over our CIPRNet, our secret email, and so that's how, you know, the next day we were all looking at this video.
Well, right, when that pilot, so he chases, so how does this come to an end?
We canceled the air defense exercise, and because we have these objects in the airspace, now it's obvious it's not really necessarily safe. End up canceling the exercise, and that's pretty much how it ended.
So we left them going and just let them go back?
Yeah, and then that was on the 14th, and I continued to get groups of contacts for another couple days after that. And, oh, by the way, I was aware enough to write down the latitude and longitude where they all faded off my radar. And it just so happens to be over the top of an island off the coast of Baja California called Guadalupe Island.
Really? And they faded off the radar at that point?
Yeah, all of them.
Interesting.
Every one of them. And what I mean by that is I'm looking at symbology. I can't see the raw radar. And when our radar system begins to lose a good track quality, it'll start to blink, and all of a sudden the symbol will just disappear. And when Lou Elizondo came to interview me in July of last year, I got to that point. He says, really? I'm going there.
Right.
And he did. That's how they went to how they knew to go to Guadalupe.
Yeah. Something's going on over there.
Yeah.
I mean, my God.
Yeah.
So when this, then you guys checked all your equipment, right? Double checked the radar
systems. Oh yeah,
systems.
That's an excellent point. When this started first happening, we were unable. Before all this happened, I'd been tracking them for a couple days. So we weren't sure if this may have been a system malfunction, because remember, we're up in a gaming architecture environment, so maybe someone had introduced these weird tracks into the system. Sure. So we or maybe it was even an error or a malfunction of
especially
the system.
Especially since it was so slow, I would think maybe something.
Yeah. So we brought down the system, brought it back up, ran all the diagnostic tests we had on the ship, and you know what happened?
Tell me.
They were even clearer than they were before. We had them even stronger than before.
Unbelievable.
Yep.
Unbelievable. So the next day after that captain captures this footage, are they talking about it on the ship? Is he like saying?
Oh, certainly. I wasn't on the Nimitz, but I can only imagine that they were. But
yeah.
We certainly were on the Princeton.
Sure.
In fact, I was so concerned, I got up, you know, real early in the morning, the next morning, I said, you know, I'm going to write an after-action message. Because this is so strange. We need to report this. So I go up to combat, and we have a device up there that records all of our external communications, all of our radio comms onto an optical disc. And lo and behold, it's missing. And I could tell that the technician's tight-lipped. I could tell that he knew, but he couldn't tell me type of thing.
Sure.
And so that data was
gone.
And
this never happens, probably. You always have that disc, right?
Yeah. And for good reason. In case of an accident, you can go back and do an investigation and figure out what the hell happened, right? It's gone, which breaks every protocol that I've ever known about. That doesn't ever happen.
Wow. So that would make me think that obviously they're keeping that for some reason. But did anyone ever come to you guys and say, okay, let's not talk about this?
Never.
Or anything like that?
Never. No? Not me personally, never.
Okay.
Now, since that time, I've learned that apparently there were other people that did happen to.
I've heard that some people had to sign a non-disclosure.
Yeah, and the reason why I think we were even able to see them in the first place, and I didn't know it at the time, but there had been a top secret upgrade of our system before we had gotten underway. They upgraded our cooperative engagement capability and did some tweaking on our spy radar and the way that it all works. I think because of those upgrades, we were suddenly able to see these things that had always been there.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah, and
so if you were on the older system, you wouldn't have been able to pick them up.
Yeah, and that kind of explains why, since 2004, this technology, our upgrade, is now fleet-wide, and now everyone's seeing them. And I think that's the reason. I'm speculating. I have to say that I'm speculating.
Sure, but it makes sense.
It finally answers the question in my mind, yes.
Now, did anyone on that, on your ship, in your area, at this time, did you think, does it enter your mind that this could be a possible extraterrestrial UFO, like the way we think of UFOs? Or are you guys still thinking, well, this is...
After that intercept happened, that's exactly what I was thinking.
Right.
This was either... because it was non-Newtonian. This was non-classical physics we're seeing here. So either it had to be something. What are the possibilities?
You're seeing all the top jets. You're in this world. You know these things.
I'm a Top Gun graduate.
Right.
Yeah. I had hundreds of intercepts in my logbook and a lot of training intercepts and also wartime operations. And I had never seen anything like this.
And you don't, and obviously, I know you don't want to speculate on what that object was. However, does it seem to you like, well, this is just a little more advanced than what we have? Maybe this is a experimental craft, or maybe it's us and or.
I was thinking UFO.
You were.
I never expressed that thought, but I was at that point. I was thinking UFO. Yeah.
Because
well,
it was
there's a reason.
So advanced.
Well, there's a good reason. It's because I designed air defense exercises for a living. And if I could describe the Navy's training in one single word, it would be safety. Everything we do is designed around not breaking stuff and killing people on accident, right? So it doesn't make any sense for me to believe that I've got this exercise going and some other part of the government puts on top of that another test or an exercise and I didn't know about it. It's not only it's dangerous as hell and it's illegal too.
Yeah,
I wouldn't want to be the guy that made that call because you could actually go to jail, go to prison for that.
Okay, so then that would explain that it's not U.S., but could it be, you know, Russia,
yes,
China?
That's a possibility.
Could be, right? Maybe
because obviously I wouldn't have gotten briefed about that, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't think it was our stuff, but it could have been someone else's stuff from here on Earth. Sure.
That's a
possibility.
But because it's so advanced, you're thinking it's possibly not from Earth. It could be.
Yeah. Right. It's it has to be one of the possibilities, right?
Sure.
It does.
Yeah.
I mean, there's only so many possibilities.
What's amazing about this is this came out. This is like as strong a case as we've had in ufology that's out there.
I mean, I didn't pick this role, man.
Right.
Yeah. In fact, it bugged me so much.
Here's another. Let's talk about this fascinating part. That when this happened to you, you retired 2 years later.
Yep.
You then thought and had the presence of mind to write a fictional book,
right,
which is an account of this, which I think is a brilliant idea.
Yep.
You changed the dates, you changed the names, but you kept the story of what happened and wrote that down and documented it.
With a fictional plot line.
Correct.
Because I had to come up with some sort of story to tell, right? And because it bugged me, because I tried to tell the story. And no one really believed me. They either thought I was drunk, or they thought there must be some mundane explanation, or maybe there was equipment malfunction. There had to be some other explanation besides,
sure,
UFO, right?
Right.
My concern was, I knew they were real, and I knew they were exhibited flight characteristics that were unearthly. And my concern was, hey, you know, what if one of these things ran into a commercial airliner? Or what if, Captain, that same thing that happened to us off the coast of Southern California happened off the coast of Iran, and I did have missiles.
Right.
And the pilot really was afraid for his life or her life, and this object really did engage them, and they really did shoot a Sidewinder missile at it, which is an IR-only missile. And that object goes zorching off into outer space, and that Sidewinder missile is now active and is looking for another target, and it acquires a commercial airliner.
Can you imagine?
Or requires one of our fighters or one of their fighters. Dude, man, it could start a war. That was my concern, but no one would listen to me. So I wrote this book. I was thinking at the time, and it's called The Seer. And my book has eight short stories in it, only because I need to have something to publish, you know. So I went ahead and I was having...
Those are just filler, basically.
It was kind of a cathartic experience for me, right, to get this off my shoulders. So I spent some time, wrote the book. And my idea was to publish it in the Library of Congress just in case the story ever become public.
It's so great that you had the presence of mind to do that, to document and get this down, because it was eating at you.
I had to do something.
That's awesome.
It was cathartic, and it was something positive.
Great.
And that actually happened, didn't it?
Yes, it did. And now it came out, and it's on the front page of the paper. We've all seen it now. You've got to feel like vindicated and relieved, and right?
Yeah.
It's got to be amazing.
It is. And I'm really proud of the Navy.
I am. And I'm proud that you had the presence of mind to write this down and document it. It really adds more credibility to the whole thing.
It's history.
It is.
My book's history.
Yeah.
And oh, by the way, when I wrote that, I had absolutely no intention of ever selling it. In fact, I gave it away for 10 years online for free as a PDF file.
Yeah.
Anyone could, even now you could go online and download. It's called Sailor's Anthology.
Well, now you should start selling it.
Well, even recently I had no intention, but Alejandro Rojas contacted me a couple months back and said, hey, you know what, Kevin, I want to publish your book. I'm like, really? Okay.
Now's the time.
And it's now published. In fact, I just got the copies in my hand yesterday, right in time for this conference. And
It's vastly more exciting.
It's hard to believe. It's a piece of history now.
Absolutely a piece of history. It's vastly more exciting to me now. If you had wrote it right now, it'd be like, okay, well, you remember that story. The fact that you documented it at the time and put that out, and that book's 15 years old or 13 years old,
yes,
that's fantastic. That makes it so much stronger to me.
And strangely enough, that the short story called The Seer, that is a fictionalized account of what happened, there's a lot of aspects in that story that actually came true in real life.
Your fictionalized part.
Yeah.
Actually. Came
for
amazing.
Me personally.
Amazing.
Isn't that weird?
It's a synchronicity. It's incredible.
Some sort of synchronicity going on,
And I think Commander Fravor has also speculated on CNN or one of these channels that he thought this may be an extraterrestrial craft.
Yeah, I think his words were not from this earth.
Not from this earth, I think is exactly what he said.
Yeah.
And to have a guy like that or a guy like you.
Yeah.
Say that you feel that this could be.
He's a very highly respected skipper, you know.
Sure.
Lots of flight hours and highly credible. And if he says that, then I got to listen, you know. I think he's right about that possibility.
And it's great that something like this came out, because now I think it's given a wider audience. People at this conference, obviously, they're interested in the topic. They've looked into this.
They're buying my books.
They're buying your book. But now there's people that are actually outside of this realm that have been exposed to this, and it gives them a wider audience.
it's kind of hard to deny that it happened.
Right.
I mean, you'd have to be purposely obtuse
right.
to believe it didn't happen.
The science guys that I talk to that are at these things that don't necessarily succumb to the UFO thing, they find this as very compelling evidence, and they don't. They're like, I don't even know what to do with it. It's so strong. It's like,
yeah.
Boy, that's something.
Yes. Yeah, I agree.
You know, in my brain, I think unmanned. I think maybe that's a drone that somebody on Earth came up with, but it's so, it does seem intelligently controlled one way or another.
Yeah. I think they were prescient, because at one point during Commander Fravor's intercept, we have a point in the sky. It's called a combat air patrol station. Basically, it's just a known
right.
point in the sky.
Exactly.
They all loiter.
Yeah, but this is like, he's supposed to go back to that space or something? Explain that to our...
The object did.
Right. But tell us what that... He's supposed to do it. He's supposed to go back to...
Well, the purpose of the cap point
right.
is just a point in space. It's all socialized. We all know where it is, and we give them phony names or, you know, make names. And the whole purpose of this is... They loiter there until they get an order to do something.
So it's like a station point. Okay,
it's a station.
Fravor, when you're done, up here to A, like
yeah.
whatever.
Or before you do something, go there first.
Go there first.
Yeah.
So now what happens when he's chasing this thing?
This thing went to that point in the sky all by itself.
Now, how is that even possible?
And I'm standing, because I'm the air intercept control supervisor, right? So I'm on the headset, and I'm standing behind the AIC, the air intercept controller. And the AIC gets on the radio and says, sir, you're not going to believe this. But that object is at your cap station.
How is that possible?
Dead silence on the radio.
Like, I was thinking,
the possibilities are they either knew where the cap station was or they read our minds.
Well, is it something that he types into a computer that the plane goes there, or does he physically drive it there?
He physically drives it there.
Okay, because let's say if something he typed in, you'd think they could maybe hack it. That's what I was thinking.
Well, the point's in his system. Just so it's on his visual displays inside his cockpit, that he'll physically drive the aircraft over there.
Could they have hacked into the computer and saw that point was on there and went there, possibly?
Based on what I saw them doing otherwise, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Either that or they have the ability, telepathic abilities.
They're either breaking into your communication.
Or they're reading our minds,
I mean, this part had to blow your guys' mind, too. Why is it sitting there? That's one of the strangest part of this whole case.
Yeah, it certainly is, right?
How does it get there? How does it know to go there? So when he hears it's there, he's got to be thinking.
I think it was a... There's two possibilities. The possibility that it was terrestrial, then that the whole hacking thing kind of makes sense, right? The other possibility was non-terrestrial. And in that case... there's two possibilities. Either they hacked it too, or they read our mind somehow.
Yeah. So this opens up that whole thing of the possibility that there is extraterrestrial life coming here. I mean, that's a huge can of worms right there.
I can't deny that, what you just said. And if I could go back to the story, that wasn't the only intercept. There was Commander Fravor's intercept and Chad Underwood's intercept. He was the guy that actually did the Atler. Meanwhile, the other aircraft had launched. And at one point, I had all these objects falling out of the sky. It was like raining UFOs at one point. And they all behaved the same way. After we left, they went back up to 28,000 feet, rejoined in a formation, and kept going south at 100 knots, as if nothing fun had just happened.
Meanwhile, you have these pilots chasing them.
And these things reacted like they just wanted to be left alone.
Wow.
At no point ever did I feel threatened or they were hostile. Never.
Interesting.
Nope. They acted like a flock of birds.
Was there any point where then you never thought, like, well, we need to shoot this down?
Oh, hell no.
Right.
No way. And even if I would have wanted to, we couldn't have, because we're in a training environment, didn't have any missiles.
Well, that's interesting, too.
Yeah, we're on purpose, because we don't go out there and kill each other. We're
right.
trying to train, you know?
Right, right.
To potentially kill other people, you know?
This is absolutely a fascinating story. I really appreciate you sharing it with us.
Right.
I think it's incredible. I think it makes a compelling case for... the potential for extraterrestrial life.
Do you think I'm lying?
Absolutely not. No, sir. You're not the kind of bullshitting guy like I am. I'm a bullshitting kind of guy. You're as serious as it gets. 20 years in the service.
Yeah, and I feel extremely vindicated, and I'm very happy with my Navy.
When you and I were talking about it, I could see the relief in you.
Yeah.
I love that you got this out, that you put that story down, and now it's in the Cato.
And it changed Navy policy. And I don't take credit for that.
Right.
That was the work of To the Stars Academy
right.
and some congressional hearings that they
Please
had.
Please share that how now the Navy is supposed to report.
Well, I haven't seen the report. I haven't seen what they came up with. But just the fact that they admitted they were going to change their policy was made me feel a lot better.
Right, because now there's a place that they can document when there is a UFO activity.
And we're going to start training to the fact that there's objects in our sky, and we don't know what they are. But if you encounter one, okay, now what do I do? Do I shoot at it?
And previous till now, we didn't have that.
Right, and it could have led to a real disaster.
Right.
I mean, it could have led to a war.
It's incredible. It's incredible. It's a great discussion. I really appreciate you sitting down and sharing it with us. And congratulations. I'm glad that the book is out there now, and I'm glad that you guys are going to publish it.
My honor.
It's great.
Yeah.
Thanks again for being here. For Truth Be Told, this is Captain Ron for Tony Sweet at the UFO Congress 2019 in Phoenix, Arizona. Thanks again.
Go Navy, beat Army.
That's right.
That's great, brother.